guys.
Hi, everybody. Ron Alcoholic. Hi. I'd like to welcome anybody new, anybody coming back. Welcome to AA. I guess it's going to be loud. It'll be exciting. So just hold on to your chair. My sobriety date's November the 3rd, 1988. So I'll be coming up to 27 years this year in November. And that doesn't make me any different than anybody sitting in this seat. Really, it doesn't. You know, I got here at 24, and what got me here was alcohol. And drank lots of it, and puked lots of it, and couldn't stop, couldn't control it. And, you know, it was just a living hell every single day. It was just an absolute living hell. You know, I'd be waking up in the mornings, and I drank from the time I was 13 to about 24. And I started the waterfront when I was 13. So I worked on these big ships, right? And I started at a time on the waterfront when longshoremen were longshoremen. Like, believe me, right? We used to work on ships filled with booze. What was better than that, right? Opening up containers and then seeing booze. Right? You know, it was just exciting, you know, and here I am, I quit grade whatever, 9, and, you know, and so I started this waterfront, and believe me, I would say that it went really, really well, but it really didn't. You know, if you're an alcoholic like I am, and you probably are, it was hell. You know, how do you stop? Like, really, how do you stop drinking? You know, I got a phone call even yesterday telling me, like, you know, how do you stop drinking? Today I know the answer to that. And I'm going to answer a lot of the questions that you might be thinking right now. You know, like, what's an alcoholic? You know, you hear people talking about the steps, but why wouldn't somebody just explain it to me? I'm sitting in this meeting, not today, but I came to AA, and I'm sitting in the seat, and I didn't understand. So how do you like sitting in that seat and not understanding, like, what an alcoholic is? And when I came to AA, an alcoholic was just a drunk. It's just somebody who drinks too much. I didn't have a clue what an alcoholic was, but I knew how to drink, right? And I knew how to drink a lot. I didn't know about how to stop, when to stop, where to stop. And the big book describes all of that. So I'm one of these big book guys. So I'll take you through the big book as quickly as I can because it absolutely changed my life. You know, so I got, even before I got here, I was in so much fear. I can remember being driven. I just drank and I drank lots and just didn't stop. Every day was a drunk. Every single day, you know. I would do anything to get that drink in me. And I couldn't stop. Things were changing within me. Things were changing. You know, where you start puking all the time and then drinking more and, you know, and bodily fluids would be flowing and you don't know why and maybe you just got cancer at 24. I don't know. You know, you don't have no friends. You're drinking, you know, by yourself or whenever or however you can. Because reality really, really sucked. And every day was like that. So I know I needed help, and I knew it. And I asked my union for some help, and they got me some help. And I can remember being driven to detox, and I can remember my sponsor, who ended up being my sponsor. And he said, "How much fear is running through you right now?" And I said, "Oh, that's a great question. Oh, fear? I got like 99% fear running through my body all through the day, from the time I wake up to the time I go to sleep. Fear, 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 fear. And it's killing me." And I said, "Well, how about you? You've been sober a little bit of time." And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "How much fear do you got?" This is my sponsor. And he said, "Oh, I don't know, maybe about 5% or something." I'm like, "What? Like, how can you live life without fear?" I didn't know that, but I'm truly going to explain it to you. And I didn't know that. And, you know, thank God I had a sponsor, you know, who walked this with me. You know, he would pick me up every day. He didn't tell me what to do. He just showed me what to do. He showed me what to do. He brought me to the meetings. He brought me to the jails. He brought me to the hospitals. He drove me to central office to answer the phones, right? You know, to help the people in the hospitals, support the hospital meetings, support the jail meetings, support all of it. Get involved in service. Get out of yourself. And I thought, you know, this is really good. I kind of like AA, right? And I can remember my very first meeting. And I was at the back, and I didn't even know what AA was. They took me out of detox because I was going to leave. And I had special privileges to leave because they knew my sponsor at the time. So he brought me to my very first meeting. And I sat at the very back, and the person up here was sharing hope that you don't ever have to live that way of life again. You don't ever have to have another drink. And I didn't know that. All I knew was about drinking. I didn't know about not drinking, but I didn't know how they did it. But what you guys gave me that very first meeting was hope. And it changed my life. It's something that I always wanted in my entire life was hope. That I don't have to die this miserable way of life that the hell I was living every single day. And if you give an alcoholic hope, you give them the world. You truly do. And I didn't realize that. And I was given hope at my very first meeting. I fell in love with AA. I was at the back and I loved it. I loved it so much we hung around from the 8:30 meeting to the 11 o'clock meeting. And I fell in love with it. So then I had to go back to detox, which I really didn't like. And they let me go out of detox because now I'm pretty much gung-ho and I love AA and I want to go to AA. And they said, enjoy your journey. And, you know, that's how it started with me. And, you know, I kept coming to meetings and I would hear you guys say things, but I didn't understand it. And I would hear you say things like, do the steps, you know, get a sponsor, you know, do the steps. You know, I just heard it over and over, be a sponsor. I'm like, that's what I'm going to do. I got 2 months sober. I'm going to sponsor people. Right? Right? I thought it was a brilliant idea. I'm like, do you want to be my sponsor or do you want to be my sponsee? Yep, perfect, let's do it. And then they asked me silly questions that I didn't know. They asked me questions like, what's step one? And I'm like, oh, Jesus, I didn't even think about the steps because I haven't done them yet. I'm like, you know what? How about let me get back to you? Right? Let me get back to you. And I'm going to power through this big book and nothing will help you more than reading that big book into sponsoring somebody. I just studied the big book. I continued to study the big book. And I always just try to stay ahead of my sponsees. And you know, I'm going to tell you, the success rate is 100%. Because I'm still here from that very first time I sponsored that very first person. I've stayed sober the whole time. But I wasn't that well, believe me, because I really didn't understand what I was doing. So, you know, I came to AA and I'm sponsoring people and I'm helping and I'm doing service work. But really, I'm still crazy because I don't understand it. I don't understand it. And the more I got into the big book, I started to understand it. And the more I really got dived into it. You know, I had all kinds of people helping me. The treatment centers were helping me. Lou Finnemore was helping me. I had like big legends in AA helping me with this to understand it. And it was really hard. So I was getting a lot of different ideas from everybody else. Joe and Charlie even helped a lot. But as I was doing all this, I was understanding the big book is truly where it's all at. You know, and even when it came down to Joe and Charlie, it comes down to step four, and I just don't agree with it, right? And there's parts of it that I don't agree with, and which I'll tell you. And so I started studying it, and you know, it absolutely changed my life. So, you know, I needed to know what an alcoholic was. And an alcoholic is someone who can't control it and stop entirely. That makes you an alcoholic, right? You know, and we have these symptoms. And, you know, I would sit in the meeting like, what are these symptoms? The obsession of the mind and the allergy. But let's get this really crystal clear. We have the obsession of the mind is right here. The obsession of the mind, and it's right here. And we have the allergy of the body. So what happens is I have this obsession of the mind, and all I kind of like focus on is drinking. That's it, drinking. And it doesn't matter who you are. I don't care if I got a sponsor. I don't care about 10 bucks too. I'm pretty much going drinking. That's all there is. And if you don't get some sort of like intervention at that point when you're in the obsession of the mind, you're going to go drinking. And if you're going to go drinking, so here's the obsession of the mind and here's the drinking. And that's the allergy. And an allergy is an abnormal reaction to something. So I have an abnormal reaction to alcohol. So then I drink, I can't control it, and I go back to the beginning. But the beginning isn't the obsession of the mind. The very beginning comes right over here. Before you even think about drinking, that obsession of the mind, something happens before that. We're over here. And that's the spiritual malady. It's that irritable, restless discontent. And Dr. Bob tells us that. Right? They even explain it on page 52. They explain the spiritual malady. And the bottom line is they tell you, you're unhappy. You're irritable, restless, discontent. So what happens is, it's before I'm even thinking about drinking, I'm spiritually not okay. And I always thought that it was the drinking that was the problem. Is drinking the problem? Absolutely not. And if you think it is, you're wrong. It was a solution. Yeah, somebody said solution. It was a solution. Right? And I always thought that alcohol, you know, was the solution or the problem. I didn't see it as a solution because I wasn't that smart. I'm just an alcoholic. And everything was controlled around that drink. But little did I know that it didn't start there. It started at the spiritual malady, that irritable, restless discontent. I'm spiritually not okay. And if you're spiritually not okay, here's a good question for you. If you're spiritually not okay, are you going to drink tonight? Chances are you might. But if, did I say that wrong? Or if you are spiritually okay, let's say you are spiritually okay. Are you going to drink tonight? And the answer is no. If I'm spiritually okay, I'm not even going to be thinking about drinking. I don't even have to worry about the allergy. I don't even actually have to worry about the obsession. But I always have to make sure that spiritual malady is taken care of, that I'm spiritually okay. And if I'm spiritually okay, I'm not going to be thinking about drinking. And I didn't realize that. So, step one, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. So the main problem is his thinking. But something happens before the thinking, it's the spiritual malady. But the main problem of the alcoholic centers in the mind. So the main problem of the alcoholic is his thinking. And I didn't realize that. So thinking is my main problem. So my thinking almost killed me. So, and I didn't realize that. And that's step one. So if you're unhappy, I don't care what you're doing in your life today, even the people out there, if you're unhappy, and the big book tells me how many people are unhappy, 97% of people in these rooms and out of these rooms are unhappy, and they're in the spiritual malady, and they want to die, or they're confused. You're living step one. You're unhappy. So that's the main problem, is my thinking and the spiritual malady. And if you're unhappy, you're in step one. So, and I don't want to stay in step one. And I tell people when I help them with the steps, and I help people all over the world now with the steps, because I have sort of like a way of doing that. And I'm helping people all over the world now, and I don't want people in the problem. I don't want you thinking. And, you know, they explain the spiritual malady, you're unhappy, and you're unhappy, you're living step one. That's how you live it. You're living step one. I'd rather go to steps two and three. And steps 2 and 3 is the solution. And what's the solution? We already heard it tonight. Solution was drinking, but it's not. It was actually the problem. My thinking was the problem. Alcohol is just a symptom of the problem, right? Thinking is a problem. So what's the solution? And it tells us in step 2, exactly the solution. Came to believe power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Hey, does anybody know what the insanity is? No, Linnea, don't you answer this. But that's what most people will say. The insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results, right? Wrong. Absolutely wrong. That's not what they're talking about. The insanity tells me it's the idea. That's the insanity. The idea that someday, somehow, we can control and enjoy this drinking is a great obsession of every abnormal drinker or whatever. Money pursued into the gates of the insanity or death. So what's the insanity? The insanity is the idea. And it comes from the mind. And you're coming from the problem. So the insanity is the idea. And many will go through this. Many will go through, oh, I'm not an alcoholic. I don't have that second symptom. I can't control it. It's crazy, and it's going to come from your mind. So step 2, what is step 2? God. And it actually tells me where God is. I'm not telling you who God is. I'm just telling you where God is through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it talks about our Creator has entered into our hearts that lives in a place which is indeed miraculous. So God's within me. And I didn't even know it. You know why I never knew it when I was out there? Because I was in the problem. And do you know, step 1 says, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Do you know what powerless means? Powerless means lacking power. It means not listening to God. People say, well, I'm powerless over people, places, and things. No, you're not. Right? If you're not listening to God, you're powerless. So, and that's what it says. We admitted we're powerless. We were lacking power. We're not listening to God. And that our lives became unmanageable. That unmanageability is the spiritual malady. So then step 2 talks about, you know, they wrote the big book for 2 reasons. One is we are the first 100 men and women who have recovered. From a hopelessly state of mind and body, and to show you precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. That's one reason. The second reason they wrote this big book is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself. And that's why they wrote this big book. But they tell us where it is. It's in my heart. But my head was getting in the way. So when I help people through these steps, I'm like, no thinking. Because that, you're in the problem. Let's just stay in the solution. And what's the solution? God. Where's God? In my heart. Prayer. That's not in your mind. You know, so, and then it goes further on. It says, deep down in every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of God. Page 55. Right underneath that, page 55, the hint is still on page 55. You can tell I've read the big book a few times. It says, the great reality. What? The great reality is just this. Something about a power greater than yourself. So they're telling you the truth, where the truth is, and it's within us. At the back of the big book, the spiritual experience, and this has a lot to do with step 2, it says, our members have tapped an unexpected inner resource, which they presently use as a power greater than themselves. So where's God? In my heart. And why couldn't I tap into that? It's because my mind was running my life. And if your mind is running your life, you're unhappy. Even right now, you're living in step 1. But if you're happy, you're in steps 2 and 3. And if you're living this daily, you know, it says, made a decision to turn our will and our life over to care of God as we understood him in step 3. Made a decision. A decision is a choice. I don't know if you guys know that. But a decision is a choice. So I got a choice every day. Like, hey, am I going to run this? Or look, hey, you know what? I'd rather let my heart listen to this and listen to my heart. And you know what? Have an amazing life. Unless you have other plans. And then it talks about we made a decision to turn our will. And our will is my thinking and my life That's my actions. Took care of God as we understood him. So what is my actions today? My actions pretty much should be loving and kindness, and it truly should. And that brings us the steps 2 and 3. So then I got to step 4. And, you know, I remember my old sponsor, his name's Milton, and he had come up to the podium, and he says, "You have to love me." And I can remember the first time this guy says, "I'm from California, and you all have to love me." Do you know the first thing that went to my mind? I don't like this guy. And you know what? I don't love him. And I'm sitting at the back, and he's from California, and he's slick, and he's cool. And if you know Milton, he just had that, you know, that aurora around him, that light. And he says, "You have to love me, and I'll tell you why you have to love me. Because if you don't love me, it might mean you don't like me. And if you don't like me, it might mean you have a resentment. And if you have a resentment, resentments take more people out than anything else." I'm like, he's right. I love this guy. Right? My mind just turned right off, and I went right into my heart. And I'm like, I love this guy. And I had a fantastic journey with Milton before he passed away. So what gets people into Alcoholics Anonymous? So what got you here? I know what got you here tonight. I know what got you here your very first day sober. Let me tell you how you got here. I've been doing this for a long time, and I fell in love with AA in the big book. And I know what got you here. And I know what got you even here tonight. Your heart. Because if your mind... You'd be down at the beach. I know right now, the blonde here, you'd be on the beach. I know that. You would be. My mind, beach, right? And some of these cool guys, JP, you'd be out having fun. I know. You'd be at a movie right now. But why are you guys here at a meeting tonight? It's because your heart is louder than your thinking. And that's what brought in the alcoholics. That's what brought me here, is my heart just one day suddenly was louder than my thinking. And I said, okay, you know what? I do need help. I am going to come here. And I do need help. And that's what keeps me coming here. That's God speaking through my heart to your heart, or from your heart to get that very crystal clear. That's why you're here tonight. It's because of God and because of the God within you. So then I had all these resentments. And I remember going through my resentments, and my sponsor says, "Do you have any?" And I'm like, "Oh my God, I'm glad you asked." Right? I don't like him. I don't like her. I really don't like anybody. Right? At this point, I don't. And, you know, he told me, well, he says, good. He says, "Why don't you just write them down?" And, you know, and I said, "That's a great idea." So he sucked me into doing step 4. Right? And today what I do is I just tell you, look, if you want to do resentments, and I take a lot of people and quickly through the steps, just pick out your top 25. Make it exciting. But just do your top 25. Just give me 25 really good ones. So, and I use me as an example of why you're resentful. I'm resentful at Right on Ron. And then why? Because he's too loud. He's too loud. If I was sober, I wouldn't like him. Or if I was trying to sober up, I wouldn't like the loud guy. I might love him today if I heard him and heard about resentments. I would have to love him, but you know. So, and I use that as an example. Now, how does that make you feel? Like, right? So that's the third list over. You know, how does it affect you, this loud guy, Right on Ron? You know what? It affects my personal relationship with him. And I'm just selfish. And then the big book talks about to conclude to others we're wrong as far as it got. And that's where most people go. And you know what? I hate this loud guy. Hate him. And that's as far as, you know, I hate my ex-wife. I don't like her and I don't like him. And that's as far as most people ever got. But you have to actually go further. And it talks about our mistakes. We resolutely look for our own mistakes. And then it goes on to there. It says, we resolutely look for our own mistakes, where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. So let me ask you a question I ask everybody, and mostly everybody gets it wrong. Is it a mistake to be frightened? And everybody pretty much answers that the same. Of course it's not a mistake. But it truly is, because God doesn't want us frightened. And I didn't realize that. So I answered, now I have to close my part and what I think about this loud guy, and I have to just close that page up, and now I'm looking at me. And this is how I look at me, and this is how I answer me, is I need to answer what my mistakes are. Where have I been? Selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. And I have to circle or whatever. And let's just say I'm selfish. But if you're selfish, I want to know why you're selfish. And people think like they have to write down a whole history. Like, I'm selfish because I don't like him and he treats me badly. I don't want to know any of that. I want to know how you kind of like feel. How do you treat me? How do you treat that person who's resentful at? So how do you treat that loud guy right on run? Well, I know how I would answer it. I'm angry. I'm what? I'm maybe jealous. I might be inconsiderate around him. I might be judging him. These are the things, and these are our faults. My faults are my defects. And they hurt us. And I can't help change you, and neither can the big book, until you find out what your faults are. And it's very, very crystal clear. And what's my fault? I'm inconsiderate. I'm mean. I'm angry. And this is how I'm reacting. This is how I'm reacting to the loud guy. And that's selfish and self-centered. So a kid stealing from 7-Eleven, and we're doing the step four, and he's stealing, and I stole from 7-Eleven or whatever, and I'm dishonest. I don't care if you're dishonest. I want to know, why are you dishonest? I'm dishonest because, you know, and they tell me in step five is because I'm inconsiderate, right? I'm a thief. Now we can see the big chunks of truth about yourself, and that's what step four is about. And then it goes to fears. So that's how we do the resentment part. So they talk about fears in the big book, and they talk about, we have fears that have no resentments in connection with the fears. And let me give you an example of some of them. Swimming. I'm not resentful about swimming, but I'm sure the hell afraid of it. So, and there's a fear solution, and I didn't realize that. At page 68, is it page 68? Yeah, page 68, halfway down the page, it talks about a fear solution. So what's a fear solution? And this is the fear solution, is to direct our attention to what God would have us be. So God, what would you have me be with this fear about swimming? Do you know what God said to me just now? Take swimming lessons. Right? And there's other fears that have no resentment in connection with them. Money. So direct our attention to what God would have us be. And do you know what happens? It tells us right after that. It says, once we come up with some sort of solution, it tells us exactly what happens. And it says, at once we commence to outgrow fear. Because now I have some sort of action I need to do to remove that fear. You really can't remove fear just by going like, God, remove my fear. Do you know what? Fear's still there. Right? I was afraid of heights. Had to do something. I'm afraid of heights. I'm a crane operator. Right? What am I going to do? I had to do some sort of action. And my action was to throw on sunglasses. It was just all I had to do, kind of close my eyes a little bit. I got out of the elevator, I'm driving these big cranes, I throw on the sunglasses, I close my eyes for a few minutes, I'm walking to my crane, these great big cranes down here, and I drive them. And that was the solution. You need some sort of action. Then I got into the sex part. And the sex relationships is just answer the questions. It's just like maybe about 8 questions that you have to answer. But the really important one when it comes to sex is, what should have I done instead? And a lot of people are like sexually abused. Women, I hear from girls and from guys. I've done hundreds of step fives. And the most important part that is in there is, you're not at fault. And you're not at fault for any of it other than just holding on to that. Right? And how do you heal from that? And you've been holding on to it for your whole entire life. And what should have I done instead? I should have told somebody. I should have dealt with this. I should have talked to somebody about this. And that's healing in itself. So when you answer the questions, no, 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 no. But what should have I done instead? I should have told somebody. And if somebody didn't listen, I should have told somebody else. And what should I be doing today? That's what I should be doing, is healing from this and not hold on to this any longer. So then it got down to the last list, and our last list in step four is our harms list. And our harms list is right at the back of step four. And the harms list is where what nobody really wants to know, or you don't want to tell anybody. For example, if I stole your cell phone, would you be pissed off? If I stole your cell phone, would you be? Of course you would. Now, what happens if you stole my cell phone? Would you be pissed off at me? No. You wouldn't have a resentment at all. You just stole my iPhone 6 Plus. Would you be resentful at me? No. But you hurt me. And this is why they have that last list there. Is that you hurt me. You stole my cell phone. And there's things that I need to fix. So I'm bringing over all my step four people, places, and things. And then I'm bringing over more. And I need to deal with this. And then how I do the steps now is once you do your step five, you do 5, 6, 7, and 8. You do them all at once. Because at this point here, by the time we get to step five and you've told somebody, you know the exact nature of your faults and your wrongs. And that brings us to step six. And I know what it says. It says you go home and you have to spend an hour and reflect over the first five steps. Well, what I do is I get you a little bit of exercise to do when you're doing step five to finish it off. And it's to add up all your like defects of character. So you're clearly looking at exactly what your defects are at this point. And let's just say your top 10 defects. What are they? They're the ones that you see every single day. I'm inconsiderate. I'm mean. Somebody cuts me off. I'm angry. So we get down to the top 10 defects. And step six is knowing or thinking about a defect of character. Step seven is when I'm actually acting out on it and I can't stop. And with God's help and with some new actions, it's possible. So what do? I do the opposite of my defects of character. So what are my 10 top ones? I hate people. I'm inconsiderate. I need to start being considerate. I need to start loving people. Number one thing is I'm angry. Well, what's the number one thing for step seven? Is you need to be loving. That's where God wants you. Our defects come from our mind. It comes from our ego, and it hurts us. God doesn't want us there. God wants us on the other side. So why do we have defects? It's because God wants you on the other side of that. And then it brings us to step eight, and step eight is done in your step four. And we have the list. We just add to it, whatever. And then we do step nine. And step nine made direct mention to such people. And you know what? I don't get anybody to do a step nine until they get their name up on the top of that list. Because this program of action, the 12 steps, this is the fellowship. The program is the 12 steps. And this is about loving you. And you need to love you. And you need to be the very first person on that step nine. And what does step nine look for every single one of you today? What I know what my step nine looks like every single day. And what is that? That might be going to a meeting. That might be loving people. It might be going for a walk. It might be treating my kids with love and respect and everybody else. What does your step nine look like? How do you love you today? And that's step nine for you. And then once you can figure out a step nine plan of action for you, then I can go to these people I really didn't like at the beginning, but who I can tolerate today and say, hey, do you know what? I was wrong. And I shouldn't have said that to you. Or here's the $40, or here's the cell phone. Hey, you know what? I owe you a cell phone. I'm going to give you a new cell phone, right? And making direct amends however I can. And step 10 says, continue to take personal inventory. And when we're wrong, promptly admit it. A lot of people, I got a few more minutes, so I'm nearly done. I'm keeping time, so give me two more minutes. So step 10, a lot of people, I talk to people and they go like, step 10 is done at night. No, it's not. Let's get step 10 and 11 very crystal clear. Step 10 is continue to take personal inventory. When we're wrong, promptly admit it. That's all through the day. We need to do that all through the day. Right? And step 11 is when I retire at night and on the awakening. And I need to answer those 9 questions on step 11. You know, and that's when I retire at night. And they kind of put all the steps into one, basically, from steps 10, 11, and 12. And step 11 is this, you got a brain at this point, we want you to use it. And that's because of one reason. So I tell people not to think doing these steps until you get to step 11. Because by the time you get to step 11, you're not thinking about you any longer. You're thinking about others. You're about loving others. You're about wanting to make an impact, like Linnea was talking. I want to help others today. And that step 11 is answering those 9 questions at night and on the awakening, going through that prayer on the awakening. And step 12, period, is helping others. Like, you got a gift, and the gift is this daily reprieve, which is in step 10. We have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. What does that actually mean? It means that you've been given a gift. Every single day, we're given a gift of sobriety, a love, love for you, love for others, and we need to give this to the world. And the impact from these steps can change you right away. I take people through steps 1, 2, and 3 in a half an hour, and if they don't live in their hearts and have completely changed of what they see in life, you've missed it. Because just in the first 3 steps, you should be in your heart, loving life, and being happy. And then you go on from 4 to 12 to help you stay there. So, and with that being said, you know what? I appreciate and love Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, if I've given anybody anything tonight, I just hope that I just give you just a little bit of hope that you'd never, ever have to live this way of life again. And maybe, just maybe, you can live in your heart like I do and like many others for the rest of your life, a day at a time. Thanks for my sobriety.